the future of experience design needs to be integrated better into our education systems at a much younger age.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 16. Today, I had the privilege of diving deep with Alexa Lee Harazimchuk. She's one of the most philosophical designers I've had the privilege of interviewing so far. You'll definitely sense her genuine heart for people and strong desire to use her design and mentoring skills to change lives and impact the future design generation. So I'm not going to take up any more time. Without further ado, let's jump right in. Alexa Lee Harazimchuk is a product designer at Yelp, where she designs thoughtful ways to connect people to local businesses and business owners to their communities. She also cares about people a lot, so much so that she started a really interesting project with her partner called Practice Happiness, where they set out to redefine the understanding of happiness. She also created a project called 100 Days of Thinking, where she posts inspirational quotes and thoughts each day to help make better sense of the world and to relate with others. She's a designer because she wants to be a part of crafting something greater than herself and wants the world to be better because she was here. I love that. And that's a great start. Alexa, welcome to User Defenders. So
Thank
glad
you
to
so
have
much.
You. Excited to have
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here too. That was really wonderful.
Excellent. Well, you sound like a really wonderful person, so I'm real excited to dive in. And you sound like a real philosophical thinker, so I'm excited to hear some of your answers to these questions.
Yeah. I have done some thinking.
Excellent. Yes, it seems that way.
Yeah, it's going to head that way.
Awesome. Let's go deep. Let's dive deep. All right, so every superhero has a secret identity and origin story. Let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show by you taking a few minutes just to give us a look into your personal life.
I grew up in Wisconsin, and I went to college to study graphic design. But really where that story starts is I went to college to play basketball. And basketball, while I was growing up, was a huge, huge part of my identity, and it still is today. So I went to college to play basketball, and while I was there, I soon found out that my experiences there were really, within basketball, were really making me not love basketball anymore. And so I needed to step back and sort of like take a look at that and see if there was something I could do to not let that happen. And so my dad is actually also a designer, and he's been living in the Bay Area for a very, very long time now, for I think about like 20 years. So he was out here in Sunnyvale and knows about a lot of the great design culture out here, and knew about a college called California College of the Arts. So I decided to apply there, and I got in. And so my third year in college, I decided to transfer. I transferred to California College of the Arts here in San Francisco, where I am today. Mm-hmm. And I had to leave playing collegiate basketball behind. However, I immediately found lots of outlets and places to play here. Like I was saying, it's been a huge part of my life and my identity. And so I was able to sort of continue to love basketball while also making a huge change in my life as far as like what I'm going to do past college and take the leap to move to San Francisco and go to art school. And it was completely, completely transformative, the best decision I could have made. And I feel very grateful too that I had the opportunity where I was in Wisconsin, which was sort of in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin. There's not a lot of people who really have those same sort of opportunities. Yeah. And so when I had that and I have family out here, I really felt like that's what I needed to do. And that just felt right. And it really was. So I went to, I graduated California College of the Arts with a graphic design degree. Mm-hmm. And that was just about 1 year ago now. And in college, at CCA. I could talk about this school for a long time. I'm really grateful for all of the people I met there, the teachers, and I think just really the way of thinking that the college teaches is very unique and very special, and that if anything, what I got out of that school is not just how to be a designer or how to craft design and make things, but really like live your life and like applying these sort of thought processes to like just how to live a happy, healthy life and a meaningful life.
Nice.
So yeah, that's my story.
Very cool. Yeah. And so with the basketball, the only parallel I could think of with basketball and design is you must be a real big fan of dribble.
No. Yeah. No, I love
Don't
that.
Don't turn it off, listeners.
Metaphor.
Yes, keep listening. the jokes get better. The jokes get better. Okay. Anyway, thanks for sharing that. I love the how passionate you are about your school and your education and sort of the in the family tradition too of, you know, your father looking up to him and seeing, you know, him being so delighted in his work as a designer and then you catching that. You know, I think as a parent myself, you know, the biggest lessons for my kids, they're more caught than they're taught. So I think that's really great.
Yeah.
Alexa, tell us your origin story. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career now?
Wow, let's see. I think that the moment that I knew that this is what I wanted to do was I was in a class at school at CCA, and it was called Interactive One. And my school day on this day was something ridiculous, like 10 hours or 12 hours. I think it was like 8 a.m. class to 10 p.m. like classes all the way through with like an hour in between all of them plus like lunch.
That's too long.
It was really long, right? But you know, you make your own schedules, and I wanted to have that schedule, so I probably didn't have a Friday class or something, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I had this Interactive One class on, it was like 7:15 to 10:15 at night, p.m.
Wow.
And that class and that teacher, actually, the teacher, my teacher's name is Kelly Murdoch Kitt. That class was so late, but I was so energized after leaving it. And so energized that I would go home and continue working through the night on whatever it was they were working on. And I really appreciated it. It was just a very like intro level to like user experience and like applying your visual design skills to that. Very intro level. But I really just appreciated the process of it was sort of, because it's in school too, so you're kind of able to explore your own ideas or what you're interested in discovering. So it's like problem seeking. So there was a very, like a discovery phase for, we had two projects. But one in particular was more personal. So, we went out and talked to people, and that's scary, especially by yourself.
Sure.
So going through that is really, it can be very vulnerable, and then bringing all that back and like, okay, so here's a need. I've been talking to people like very genuinely about something that they care about and that, you know, I care about. And is there something that I could possibly do to make that experience better, make their lives? It's not like necessarily easier. I don't really like to say that. I think that's maybe used a lot, but it's more about like the meaning, like something that's meaningful. And I really appreciated having or being able to use design and these ways of thinking to create like more positive experiences.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And, you know, I'm going to tell my origin story really quick because you inspire me in telling your story about, you know, really going after it. And even when whatever hours of day it might be, you know, whenever you can make it happen, you know, that's sort of my origin story, too. In 1999, I had just gotten married and had a really dead end day job. I really wanted to do this design stuff for a career, and it was so hard to get my foot in the door. But I just built a kick butt portfolio. Showed off just some design chops, got in front of an ad agency, one of the biggest ad agencies where I lived in Orange County, California at the time, and they hired me as an art director, an interactive art director, my very first role, very first foot in the door. And it was mostly based on what they saw on my portfolio. However, I had no real world experience. So once I got in and they started handing me projects, and the output was crap, was really not good. I'll be honest, it was not good because I had no experience. I didn't really have much sensibility yet. So what happened was my boss took me aside and he's like, you know, we thought you were at a much higher level than this. We're probably going to have to let you go. And I just said, please let me, I will do anything I can. Cause I really wanted, that was the opportunity for me. I said, I will do anything, whatever it takes. And he said, how about you enroll yourself into some classes? So that's what I did. I enrolled myself into an extension campus. It's like a college campus. It's really focused on design, no big name or anything, but it was something that I could do after work. We had no kids yet, so I had a lot more flexibility, but it was hard going. I worked 9 to 5, so to speak, and then I went to school four of the 5 days out of the week and into the night because I was so hungry to keep doing this and to prove that I could do this. And sure enough, toward the end of actually right as I was kind of getting in the midst of my education, a really big project landed on my lap at work that I got to work on and really got to prove myself. And so all that to say, long story short, if you're hungry enough, you can do this. And, you know, school is wonderful, but you don't even have to go to school. There's so much resource online and through people who are willing, just like what you guys do at Cascade, people who are willing to invest in you and see your potential and help you find your strengths. That's really my long story short is just it can be done. It can be done.
I completely agree. If you're passionate enough, if you want something enough, you'll go out and do it. And I love that. That's exactly how I feel. And I just think that I think that there needs to be a lot of, whether it's like self-discovery or really like taking some time to yourself and figuring out what it is that you want to like contribute towards with your time here on like in this physical body on Earth, that you will go out and accomplish what you want to.
Amen. Who has been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
Oh man. Okay. So I kind of want to say two people.
Okay.
So hear me out. And I think, the first person that I want to bring up is actually my high school basketball coach. His name is Greg Capper. And I used to actually, my previous website, I did this a lot more, but I used to relate a lot of just who I am or how I work back to basketball. And I still, like, so much of what I learned from playing basketball, being a part of a team, really wanting to accomplish goals and be a part of something really great. Go through perseverance. So many things. All of that I related back to basketball, and I still do. And I had a really, really important like mentor type person for me when I was growing up, and that was my basketball coach. And I'm still so grateful and thankful that he cared so much about not only basketball or like winning, which not just winning, but like actually like the players, like who we were, how we could be better people just in our lives. And I think that I still use a lot of what I learned from him in my practice and how I work and what I do now.
Awesome.
So So my second person has to be my dad. His name is Andre Hrazemchuk. And he is a designer as well, like I had mentioned earlier. And he's been a huge, huge influence for me. I think especially since I moved out here. So my parents are divorced. My mom and I lived in Wisconsin for most of my childhood. My dad has been out here in the Bay Area since the beginning of like the dot-com boom, and has been a designer ever since like the early 90s. And it's kind of silly. Well, it's kind of, or not silly. It's kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but I didn't really know what my dad did for the most part, growing up. I'd come out to California to visit occasionally, like every year. But I didn't really know. And my dad was doing lots of this sort of stuff for a very long time. And it wasn't until I moved out here and went to art school that I really started to figure it out. Hmm. And I'm very lucky to have been able to have him also as a mentor, someone I really look up to, throughout my time in school and in past school, because I think that a lot of what I learned, I was able to learn a lot more and a lot more that I would never have been able to from just being in a classroom setting. Even if the classroom setting is like 15 people, there's something very, very personal and special about sitting in front with like just one other person and them just either like listening to you or questioning you and really trying to help you get to the answers that you're trying to solve. And my dad was has been a huge and continues to be a huge superhero, I guess, in my life.
I love it. I have daughters too. I have three and one on the way. And I just love being a dad. And, you know, just here's another cliche, but I love this. I think it's so, so true, is that how do you spell love? It's T-I-M-E, you know. And yeah. If you're a parent, make sure you make that time for your kids and invest in them. You know, I mean, in the end, you know, when we're on our deathbeds, you know, this getting real deep here, but mm-hmm. when our deathbeds, we're going to want our family, those who are closest to us, next to our side.
Exactly. You know? It's so, about the people.
Yeah, it's about people. Absolutely. Let's get into your transformation. Actually, before we do that, Alexa, can you tell us about one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
Oh, one thing.
Yeah, just one.
Oh, man.
I know it's hard.
Let's see. I guess I'm going to say something about Practice Happy.
Great.
Okay. I'm really excited about, I'm redesigning our website right now. It's practicehappy.today. And nice. We've sort of started to reimagine really what we want that, space on the internet to be. And we're going to start calling ourselves sort of like a creative studio. And we want to go out and do more like social experiments or try to uncover like patterns or like different ways of thinking or have more thought-provoking questions and in a more of like a studio type of way. So like very like short, quick projects or maybe like prompts. So I'm really excited to see what we come up with sort of going into the new year after I've sort of finalized the design of the new site to see what happens with that.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
I love the idea. You know, it's just, and I saw the teaser reel there. Asking the questions, and I thought it was really fun, really well done, and some of the cuts and things. I can't wait to see that evolve.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's get into your transformation now. Every superhero comes to a place where they realize the powers they have and they harness them for the greater good. Now, let's talk about your design superpower, Alexa. What would that be?
Yes, nice. Well, the greater good. I love that.
Yes. I know. You're all about that.
I know. Okay. So I did some thinking, and I think that my superpower is uncovering the why. So I had another teacher that I'm going to bring up. Cool. His name is Eric Hyman, and I took a class with him where one of his like phrases that he always said was, why should I care or make me care? And I think that within design and thinking about design, that that is something I'm always constantly striving for, working towards. And it's uncovering the why. Why should any of us care about this thing that we're building? Why should that thing exist? Mm-hmm. Are we also thinking about how this thing that we're building could potentially cause harm to whoever is using it or whoever is a part of what we're building? Are we thinking of that case and preparing for it? And so we can know what to do when that happens. And constantly just coming up with more reasons to for why this thing should even exist.
That's good, because I was just thinking of when you were sharing about, you know, uncovering the lie and making the world a better place through our design, making people care, but it's not making them, it's building stuff that they actually care about. You know, you can't make anyone care, right? You have to create something that you know they will care about.
Yeah, and I think it's also just being really self-reflective about like the intention too of it, mm-hmm. you know, especially when it comes to like capitalism or at work making money, are we making decisions that are not just because we want to make a lot of money? Like that's no good. Like it has to be something deeper than that. And of course we all need to make money to survive and to live in this world that we live in. And that is fine and that's great. But like more importantly, I think our intentions for why things should exist. And at least we're being very intentional and careful about what we put into the world.
Absolutely. And you know, we build things that bring value to people. I think that's when people start caring.
When
they know that we care about them first. In the things we do. So there's a talk I was thinking of. It's a talk by Eric Meyer. It was so good, and it totally touches on this. It's about building systems, thinking about what we're building now for the future, for the next generations. You know, I mean, we're living in a very high-tech age, obviously, and it's only going to get more. I mean, all this talk about artificial intelligence and, I mean, the virtual reality, all the things that we're moving into. So he has a great talk. I'm gonna find it, and I'll put it in the show notes here, but I think it's very relevant to what you just shared.
Great. I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, it's excellent. So adversely, what's your design kryptonite, Alexa?
Okay, yes, I've been thinking about this one as well. So my first thought, and actually I feel like this is like the kryptonite of all designers, is like utopia, right? Like wouldn't a perfect world where everything just works and is wonderful, wouldn't that be our kryptonite? Ironically so, because I feel at the same time that's sort of always what we're striving for. And so it's, you know, life is about balance and, you know, contrast. We wouldn't understand happiness if we didn't understand sadness. But it seems like especially as designers, since we're problem solvers or problem seekers, that our kryptonite would be just like perfectness, which, you know, will not exist. But besides that, I tried to come up with one more, maybe more personal to me, which I'm going to say my kryptonite is like meaningless work. And that's the work where someone says, like, I don't care. I really get frustrated with when I hear that. And I feel like I hear it sort of a lot, especially from like the rebels, the people who sort of like are rebelling against the rebellion nature of youth or whoever. And it's like frustrating because it's not that you don't care. I guess maybe let me back up. I think that there's perhaps two types of I don't cares, right? Like there's one where it's like, I don't care because this person is purposely trying to make fun of me. And I'm going to stand up against that because I know that that doesn't identify to me. Like, there's that one version. And there's the other version where you're just like, I don't care. Like, F everything. Mm. I'm going to do what I want and disregard everyone else. And, like, that's not cool. And I don't ever want to work on work where that is, like, I don't care. Just do whatever. Like, yeah. No, that's... No, thank you. That is, like, scary.
Yeah. Empathy, not apathy, right?
Yeah.
Big difference. One of the things I was thinking about, too, when you're talking about meaningless work, it reminds me of a quote that my friend Golden Krishna, who's in an upcoming episode.
Interview. I've met him.
Oh, great interview. Yeah, he's a great guy. But he, in his book, in his wonderful book, The Best Interface is No Interface, he quotes somebody named Jeff Hammerbacher. And Jeff says, the best minds of my generation are thinking about how to make people click ads. That sucks.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, you know, there's a balance. Of course, when we work for somebody, we also have to have empathy for the people we work for, which was another great conversation I had recently with, I think it was with Josh Clark. I can't remember. Yeah, it was with Josh, I think. So part of that work is, you know, obviously generating revenue, because you can't have a job without revenue.
But
I think it's, if you can somehow even be that change within your organization, you know, really take initiative to, you know, we got to do this stuff, but let's do some more meaningful work. And here's an idea, or here's five ideas, you know, of how we can do that. So I think it's sort of being that change. Being the change you want to see, as Gandhi said, right?
Yeah, exactly. That simple.
Awesome. This one's a lot of fun. What would your UX design superhero name be?
Okay, yes. This one is so tricky. And let me tell you, so I had a first idea, and then I also was like, that doesn't sound right. And I wanted to go on and online and try to find like a better word to make it feel more superhero-esque, but and I found a website. It was very silly, but
nice.
So my first one, which is not the one I chose, was Question Master.
Ooh.
Because I feel like I'm constantly asking why, and like trying to see what the person who I'm talking to try to see what they say and what they're thinking. And it's all about the other person. And so I wasn't quite happy with that name. Hear me out. So I did.
I like where you're going.
Yeah. So I did some Googling, and I came across the word essence.
Ooh.
And that's my new favorite word.
I love that.
So essence in definition is the intrinsic nature or indispensable quality of something.
Huh.
And I feel like that really encompasses who I am as a designer, how I think as a designer, and it's very it comes from within, and it's about and it's still about meaning and finding meaningful work and doing something that matters. So essence.
Love that. That is great. Just essence, huh?
Yeah.
That's cool. And, you know, I interviewed Dan Moll, the great Dan Moll, last week. And this is a little surprise. Nobody knows yet, but his superhero name is Vision.
Oh, that's good.
So that's good too, huh? So I like these still. It's just one word, just simple. You know, that's great. So this is this next question is not a fun one to answer, but it's certainly, I think, a really valuable one, especially for our listeners, because we learn a lot from our own failures and also from other people's failures as well. So what's your life altering experience that we could call maybe the biggest failure or biggest kind of setback in your career so far?
Yeah. Well, I want to bring up again another story or experience that I had while I was in school.
Okay.
Although that's not like necessarily in my career, I think that it was really impactful for me as far as how I look forward.
Sure.
To. So we had a lot of people come in and sort of give talks or talk with us in one of the classes I was in called Transitions into Professional Practice when I was a senior, my last semester. And I'm very interested in the health and the food industries and what design can bring to them. And if you knew me in school, most of my projects ended up in that sort of space. And so we had someone come in who used to work at IDEO that worked on this really, really cool food project where they were like going in and totally transforming cafeterias for a couple schools, I think in Palo Alto or somewhere in the South Bay, whatever. Yeah. Just a really, really cool project. Like something I know that I would really want to be a part of and at least learn more about and see what, like where it is now. And so, she gave her speech, and then the class ended at some point. She was still there, and I didn't go up and talk to her. And then for whatever reason, whether it was nerves or like didn't feel like the right moment, maybe she was talking to a lot of people. I don't really remember. Mm-hmm. But so I left, and I must have like gone to the cafe or something, and then really on my way out, because I was going home, I was headed to the bus, I saw her again getting her bike, and I still didn't say anything. Mm. And I kept walking, and I remember immediately being like, but that was the moment. I was supposed to stop and talk to her and ask her whether it was more about how I could learn more about this project or get more info on it or learn more about her experience, just one of those things. And I didn't do it. And so, it's still like, it was a very vivid experience for me. And it's probably she has no memory really of this. She didn't know I was experiencing this at all. But she doesn't know she had this very profound like impact on me. And, so I'm very adamant now about really taking that risk and, there's nothing really to lose, but something really to lose to go up and talk to people or ask people about things that you're really, really interested in. And so I've taken that experience and I don't do that anymore. I really, really reach out to people and I try to, I just take those opportunities when they're presented with me and I don't let them slip away.
I love that. That is so good. That's such a valuable lesson, and I'm so glad you shared that. And I mean, I could probably talk for another 10 minutes on this, but I'll just try to summarize with some of my own experience. This has been a really big thing for me, honestly, facing my fears and even doing this show. I mean, I'm an introvert. I would never have imagined me talking to great people that I look up to, you know, and that I really respect. I would never imagine me doing this and then pushing this out into the public to hear, you know. So, I mean, there's so much in that, but it's, you know, Tim Ferriss says, do one thing every day that scares you.
Yes.
You know, I love that. I mean, that's how we grow, right? And I love what the great Pat Flynn, I really respect him a lot. He says, I'd rather live a life full of oh wells than a life full of what ifs.
Yep.
You know, there's so much. And final thing I'll say is I was at a premiere. A buddy of mine is an artist. He's a matte painter and he does movies and stuff. And so he gets invited to a lot of premieres of movies he's worked on. I got invited to one. It was Snow White and the Huntsman, and Christopher Nolan was there. And he was just checking out a film. I mean, he probably just, you know, walks right into those things, you know. That's like his church, you know, the movie theater. So he was there, and my buddy pointed him out. I honestly wouldn't have recognized him immediately, but I'm like, you know what? If I don't just go and ask him for a selfie right now, like, I'm never gonna see this guy again. And I love his work, so I just went and did it, and I felt so great about it and had a nice picture to show for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't be afraid. Don't let fear hold you back, defenders. Life is too short to have the regrets of what ifs. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that.
No.
This is the last question of this section, but this is one of my favorites, and it can go pretty deep, but it's what does the future of UX look like to you?
I really think that the future of experience design is in our young people, and that we're in our education systems, and that we need to be teaching this way of critical thinking and problem solving to people at a much younger age, and integrating it into how we teach. Because if we can help foster people at a younger age to be both more conscious human beings when they're older, but also get really excited about something that they want to be a part of and potentially help change with their time spent in the world, that we could potentially have a really like kick-ass generation or group of people who want to strive for something like greater or bigger than themselves, be a part of something. So I think the future of user experience is actually integrating that into our education systems.
Oh, that's great. And you know, the future is, are all of these young people right now that are, you know, I mean, we need to, I agree with you. We need to really find ways to reach out and to reach these younger folks who are really excited to learn more, but maybe don't have a lot of direction, don't really know where to go, perhaps. So I'm hoping maybe this show will do that, you know, because that's really a big part of why I do this, is to really help, you know, those. And this is really specifically for those who are really, you know, maybe young in their career, but this also transcends that too. I mean, I think anybody can listen to this. Anybody in a design position can listen to this and glean from this show. But I especially have a heart for the younger folks and people who are just really trying to kickstart their career and push it really further. So I agree with you. We had a young fellow walk through the office recently. It was so sweet. He's probably, I think, eight or nine years old and really hungry to learn. Maybe he's a little older. He might've been 10 years old, but really eager to learn and, you know, loves animation. And, you know, there's so many opportunities for that kind of work, especially, you know, with the works we're doing on screens and things. And so I was able to really impart some knowledge to him and also give him some resources to take away. And I got him started on a Framer tutorial while I was here.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was just awesome. So fun. But I mean, a total example of that. And I agree with you. I think that's the future. And we need to really be investing into, you know, that. And it goes back to our talk about building systems for the next generation that makes sense and that make a difference.
This episode is brought to you by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Whether you started as a digital company or not, we're all digital now, and that's been a tough transition for many organizations. Universal Mind helps mid to enterprise-sized companies find and deliver something valuable through design thinking workshops, UX design, and development consulting, and believes in supporting user defenders to help train and inspire the next generation of designers. Learn more at universalmind.com.
So let's wrap up the show with superpowers. What's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Okay. I'm actually going to go quite opposite, perhaps, of what you would imagine me saying. And
great.
Say that a tool or a resource that I would recommend would be something not design related. So if you're finding yourself like on Dribbble a lot or on Design Inspiration or wherever you typically go to read design
awards.
Yep. That was good. That's exactly how I would pronounce it. So if you're finding yourself viewing or on those websites a lot, that you should actually stop for a moment and go find inspiration elsewhere, somewhere not design related, whether that be talks or podcasts or you know, something online, or actually you know, what if you just go out into nature, take some time to yourself, and just do some thinking. I think a lot of the patterns or a lot of inspiration should and needs to be found just outside in the world. And then besides that, the last thing I wanted to say is that one of the best resources or tools that I think every designer at any stage in their process or life should have a really good design mentor. I think especially for young people or especially for people just starting off in design, I think that's critical. But I think everyone really would benefit from having a good design mentor. And I think it's just like everyone in life would benefit from this. But because we're talking about design, find that person who you can learn from, wants to teach you, and that they also feel like they can learn something from you.
Absolutely agree. Love the idea of, you know, getting away from your computer. I mean, we're surrounded by screens, you know, that's such a sentiment that's becoming more in the foreground more and more, especially with my friend Golden Krishna. I mentioned his talk coming up is all about that and his book. But we need different input in order to create different output. And I think that's what will help us. You know, there's all this talk about how everything looks the same. I wrote a little something about that too, a piece about that. But one of my main sentiments was like, we just need different input. I think that, you know, I mean, of course there's conventions and we know those make sense, the mental models and everything and things that have taken probably our users probably a while to sort of learn. But I feel like there's still, we are creative people, and I don't think we're going to ever be happy settling with just a flat design, so to speak, you know, quote unquote,
right.
Just slap a flat design on it. You know, I think a lot of that will come from, like you said, getting up, going out, experiencing nature, turning your phone off, leaving your phone behind, having a conversation, a really deep conversation with somebody you really care about, getting inspiration from totally various ways that you've never thought of before. I highly recommend that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. One of my, just to add on that to the end, one of my design philosophies is meaning comes from making. Hmm. And I think that there's a lot of moments that you wouldn't realize or you wouldn't come up with unless you just went out there and made something or did something. And that a part of that process is just going out and walking around, and that you find a lot of serendipitous moments that way. And that part is really critical to coming up with both like good and meaningful work.
Oh, I think you just named this episode. Meaning comes from making.
Good
stuff. So let's see. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Okay, so I went to my bookshelf and I realized I have a lot of books that I need to read still. And
me
I appreciate
too.
That you brought this up because I'm going to go and read them now.
All right.
But I guess related to our talk, I found a couple because I knew where this was, the direction of this talk was going.
Good.
Can I name two?
Sure.
Okay. The first one is called Just Design. It's by Christopher Simmons.
Hmm.
It's Socially Conscious Design for Critical Causes. So both of the books I'm recommending are kind of like little sample books of a number of projects that are designed for good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first one. And then the second one is Designing for Social Change, Strategies for Community-Based Graphic Design. And this is by Andrew Shea.
Hmm. That sounds it. Those both sound very interesting to me.
Yeah. Oh, and then Dear Design Student on Medium.
Ah, yes.
Like
Mike's.
Serious.
Mike's
yes.
channel.
Yes.
Excellent. Those are great. I'll be sure to link those up in the show notes.
Wonderful.
All right. So this is the last question I have for you, Alexa. But this is probably one of my favorite ones. And again, reflects back upon why this show exists, to really serve our audience and those who are really trying to take their career to the next level. And you may have touched on this a little bit already with your answer about resource. But I'd like to ask you, what's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
Yes. Great question. So my advice is to go find your why.
Mm.
I think that if you haven't figured out what your design philosophy is, or what your way of thinking, like your specific way of thinking is, that you need to do that. And you do that first before anything else. You need to, again, like go out, take some time to yourself, get out of the house, make lists about things that both interest you or that you care about and that you want to bring to the table, and then be able to write something up, be able to talk about why it is you do what you do, because that is very, very important, and you need to be able to explain that to people who you want to potentially work with. There's a conversation that I had in art school a lot, which was this conversation around what's the difference between design and art? Like, what's the difference? And they're very similar, actually. They overlap. but there is a difference, and I will explain
sure.
my perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So art is very beautiful, and what makes it beautiful is that it only has to be beautiful to you, to whoever the maker is. And if other people find it beautiful and wonderful, then that's great, but that's not the point. And so in design, the difference between art and design is that design has to be just personal enough so that someone else gets it. Design has to be for other people. It has to be just personal enough that someone else gets it. So what that says also is that you have to be working on something that you care about and that you are passionate about,
yeah.
and that you can't be so passionate about it that you identify with it, because it's not about you. It's about the other people who it affects and it touches.
Yes.
It's about the other, but you still have to really care about it. And so that's my definition of design and art.
Great advice, Alexa. Awesome. So this has been so fun. I just want to, as we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Oh, well, you can visit my website, my personal portfolio site, which is alexaleeh.com. My email is design@alexaleeh.com. And you can check out my Practice Happy project at practicehappy.today. And yeah, I love talking to people about all the things we talked about today, or about design and about meaningful work. So I'd love if anyone wants to reach out, I'd love to talk with them.
Awesome. Thank you so much for putting that out there. And you've been totally nothing but friendly to me and responsive to me. And so I just appreciate you being on the show today, Alexa, and all the great value I know our listeners are going to glean from. And so I just want to thank you and just fight on, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This has been quite a pleasure.
I really admire Alexa's design philosophy that extends far beyond herself and personal preferences. Great takeaway, especially about different input for different output. It's something I've been dwelling on a lot myself lately. Be sure to take a look at her happiness project. It's called Practice Happiness, and I'll link to it in the show notes. Thanks again so much for listening. I am truly honored that you take the time to listen. If you're enjoying the show, I'd leap over tall buildings if you take a minute to leave a rating and review on iTunes by visiting userdefenders.com/review. Or if you're on your phone, there's a link in the show notes that will teleport you right to it. Because I know you fight for the users, I encourage you to subscribe to the bi-weekly Bugle at userdefenders.com/join to find out who the next super guest is and get my usable thoughts. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.